Well, good morning. Happy Sunday. A rainy day here. Good to see you all. And I know a number of people have also joined the Samish Island retreat with Norman. And I hope they're enjoying their time there. But
On Zoom.
On Zoom, too. Everything's on Zoom, at least for a little while longer. This pandemic, eh? Well, today I'd like to talk about loneliness, and I'm calling this talk kind of this time of loneliness. I think as almost everyone knows, Kate is back home after being away for about a month, visiting her father, and it is so good to have her home again. And while she was gone, we talked almost every day on the phone or occasionally on Zoom. But still, you know, I missed her. And at times, I felt lonely. And I count myself among the fortunate to have a loving partner, to be pretty healthy, and to live close to nature. During this time, so many are not so fortunate. Many people lived and still live in restricted and isolated, maybe I should say perhaps still live restricted and isolated lives because of the COVID situation. So as I was thinking about this, the pandemic has brought us much loneliness along with other forms of suffering. I remember at the start of this pandemic, we all became aware of the terrible suffering and loneliness of the elderly as lockdowns and sheltering in place were mandated. And then before long, we were all in some form of isolation. When I was researching this, I came across a recent study by Cigna, which is a global health provider. They did a survey. A survey showing that the majority of adults over 18 consider themselves to be lonely. And those born, let's say those in their mid-20s to early 30s, were the loneliest of all. Interesting. And sad. And of course, this modern-day loneliness, while exacerbated by the COVID restrictions, was with us before. In 2017 and 2018, you may remember the Surgeon General of the United States, named Vivek Murthy, declared an epidemic of loneliness in the United States. And the same years, the UK government appointed a minister of loneliness. A minister of loneliness. Now, our Zen ancestors left us teachings that we are one, whole, and complete, without reason to fear separation, lack, sickness, or death. We are all one. And hearing and practicing those teachings, then how do we account for the reoccurrent sense of loneliness that sometimes touches all of us? And what does loneliness teach us? If anything. Now, during this talk, I want to make it really clear that I'm not talking about depression, which can overlap loneliness. And depression, of course, can be very serious, and if chronic, can lead to a person's inability to really take care of themselves, to take care of their individual responsibilities. And often I think depression needs outside help of some kind. But rather, I want to talk today about a basic sense of loneliness that we all feel at times. And sometimes, even in a crowd, we can be lonely, right? Even in a party, we can be lonely. And that loneliness has touched all of us, some of us very deeply, over this past year and a half. After all, human beings are rarely alone, right? As we are primates, and primates are social animals. And when we look at the, you know, our history, the story of our kind of evolution coming together, the evolution of mankind really is the story of us as human beings evolving as groups. We depend on each other. We depend on society. We need each other to survive. But it's also true we like our privacy. And in our modern culture, we sometimes swing between wanting to spend time with each other and wanting to spend time alone. It's, of course, very natural. But there are times in our lives, episodes, when we feel extremely lonely. You know, maybe a lover leaves for good. We move to a new town or country. Our partner, our close friend, maybe dies. We are isolated during a pandemic. At times like these, you know, we can all feel an intense loneliness. And it may seem that that loneliness starts to take over our life. But what is loneliness? In looking at some of the literature around loneliness, particularly the sociological, psychological literature, I notice it's usually defined something along the like this, a kind of complex, painful, or unpleasant emotional state in which a person experiences powerful feelings of emptiness and isolation. And in extreme loneliness, it can be create within us, I think, a kind of profound distress. And that distress is nurtured by our imagination. Imagination that we are without connection, without community. At the present and also in the future will be the same. Murthy, the Surgeon General that I mentioned just a little bit ago, said, to be at home is to be known. To be at home is to be known. And he suggested that loneliness is the feeling that arises when we have no sense of home, really, no place of home. Or perhaps another way of describing it is the narrative that we create that we are not needed, we're not loved, that society does not care, that we're not really seen or known. Now, loneliness, I think, has some rather strange characteristics. Because it's not necessarily the result of being alone, right? As you know, we can easily feel lonely when we're surrounded by others, especially when we feel threatened or we don't fit in. Feelings of isolation and loneliness can easily arise. And research has shown that when we are in a state of loneliness, we become very critical of ourselves. Which, of course, reinforces the thoughts of, you know, we're not worthy of company, etc. And the loneliness deepens. But perhaps the strangest characteristic of loneliness, at least the one that I've come across, is that loneliness loves company. It's contagious, spreading through friends, particularly occurring in clusters extending up to 3 degrees of separation. Who knew? And of course, when we're lonely, we often don't behave or do things that are in our own best interest. And of course, the reason for that is we want a resolution. We want this loneliness to end, and so we start by maybe distracting ourselves, watching TV shows, eating our go-to comfort food, buying new clothes, hoping the loneliness will go away if we can distract ourselves long enough. And occasionally that works. And when we feel deeply alone, we may even take more drastic measures, like turning to drink, to drugs. I think if we went around the Zoom and asked each person, what do you do when you're lonely, everyone would have an antidote of some kind that they would tell us about, some way to distract themselves, to shift away from those feelings. And I will admit, for me, food is kind of close to the top of the list. Eat something when lonely. When I started researching this topic among the various Buddhist books and resources that Kate and I have, I was a bit surprised to find there's very little about loneliness, particularly in the early Buddhist texts. It's only addressed, as far as I can tell, as a very minor and not that common experience. The early Buddhist texts, the early suttas, are full of Buddha's encouragement to his monks and nuns to enter the forest, to practice in solitude, but seldom is any feeling of loneliness mentioned. Here's an example. Come, you monks, choose a remote lodging in a forest at the foot of a tree, on a mountain slope, in a glen, a hill, a cave, a cemetery, a woodland grove, in the open, or on heaps of straw. Choose that place alone. Now, the early texts, as I think most of us know, talk about all kinds of problems in the human life. They talk about the five hindrances, like sensual desire, ill will, sloth, restlessness, doubt, as these are important factors that can hinder our practice. The texts also discuss what are called the kleshas, or these kind of negative mental states that cloud the mind and causes confusion and suffering to arise, like greed, hate, and ignorance. These are kind of classic Buddhist examples. But other examples of kleshas in the early texts are things like conceit, skeptical doubt, recklessness, pride. But alas, loneliness is not listed there. So perhaps this form of suffering, this form of dukkha that is so present in modern times, was not prevalent in early Indic or Chinese society. And, you know, this may be true for our own culture as well, the Western culture, because apparently the word loneliness very seldom appears in English language before the 1800s. Now, I truly believe loneliness has always been with us, but I think it is for good reason that loneliness is called the disease of our time. So, loneliness is a form of dukkha, a form of dissatisfaction or discontent. Dukkha. The Buddha called dukkha, you know, the first noble truth, right? Because dukkha is the bedrock of our experience. We all intimately know suffering, dissatisfaction, pain, discontent, all of that stuff that falls under that word, dukkha. Dukkha is part of that deep current that connects us all. We all swim in the river of dukkha. Now, scholars really don't know why the Buddha started with dukkha as the first noble truth. There's lots of speculation. But I suspect he wanted us to not quickly move on from our suffering, grasping for a solution really quick. But I think he wanted us to deeply consider it, to carefully consider it, and fully see that dukkha, when we do this, becomes a Dharma gate. Let me give you an example. When I was a young man of 20, I went to Kanazawa, Japan, to study Aikido. Not really having any idea, other than perhaps a few romantic notions of what I was getting into. And looking back now, it's a good thing I didn't know what would happen, and that I didn't have a well-developed imagination of possible obstructions that may happen. Not to say, I quickly add here, that I regret at all having gone to Japan, but what allowed me to travel alone to a country I had never been to, where I knew no one and where I could not speak or understand the language, was not so much courage as perhaps an inability to imagine the difficulties that I would encounter. Coupled, of course, with a sense of excitement. It is true, I think, that at times the conditions of youth can carry us far down a path that as a mature adults we would perhaps long hesitate before entering, or we may avoid altogether. Maybe it's simply because when we're young, we haven't been whacked about so much by the world and our various experiences. Anyway, I went. I went to Japan rather ignorant of what I was getting into, and for a while, indeed quite a while, I was carried along on the joy of being in an altered world. The constant newness and beauty of Japanese culture held me in the present moment. Again and again, it was so stunning to be there and alive. It was a bit like a child, right? I felt like a child opening one Christmas present after another, and there was always more under the tree. Each day brought unique sights, sounds, tastes, and I was completely involved in experiencing and developing my understanding of that society. I remember still very vividly the sensation that my world had suddenly grown. It was vast and rich, and each day was long and full. My teacher, who spoke English, she was about the only person in the group that spoke English, he took pleasure in taking me around, showing me the sights around Kanazawa, introducing me to new tastes and things. And months passed. But as we all know, the fundamental Buddhist teaching is that all things change. And they did. My teacher became busy with other students and areas of his life. The one Japanese friend who kind of chummed around with me started to have more family responsibilities. And abruptly, I was alone for much of the time. It was an aloneness that had a different quality to it than I had ever experienced before. It was not homesickness, although that came and went a little bit. It was more complex, more painful. One aspect unique about it was that my usual ways of dealing with loneliness no longer worked where I was. Not having money, I couldn't shop. or go to coffee shops or restaurants. I couldn't take pleasure in watching TV since I didn't understand Japanese at that point at all. There was only one small bookstore that carried a few English books that I could not afford to buy anyway. And foreigners were a rarity in Kanazawa in those days. In that first year I was there, I only saw two others. So not only was I lonely, but I had no way to distract myself. It was a very painful and a very fruitful time. And as the weeks passed, my loneliness deepened, and with it came a kind of desperation. Should I leave and return to Vancouver? I'm not getting much of the training anymore. Nobody likes me here. I'm so unhappy. There's no one to talk to. Those kind of thoughts, you know, arising and having to face them, deal with them, listen to them. And the choice was, of course, either to believe them or put them down. And I did a bit of both. Perhaps most of us have been in a situation where similar thoughts and feelings arise. But what made this a fruitful time for me was I was stuck. Not speaking any Japanese, it wasn't easy for me to arrange a travel back to Vancouver. And it wasn't easy for me to try to tell my teacher, who had housed and fed and taught me for free, that I wanted to leave before even a year was up. I was trapped by my reluctance to face my teacher, to admit my loneliness. And as the weeks passed, and I lived with the loneliness, I gradually became familiar with it. And by that I mean I came to really look at it. Much of the day I would spend in a large public Japanese garden, very, very beautiful, walking the paths, looking at the carefully maintained landscapes. I went there because my sense of loneliness eased when I was among trees. And in this way, gradually, without realizing, I turned towards my loneliness. And something accompanying that loneliness cried out. It cried out in my loneliness. It cried out in my aloneness. It cried out to my aloneness. Something different from, and something deeper than, my usual sense of self. Hard to describe, but both sudden and gradually, loneliness became just loneliness, and with it arose a kind of subtle beauty. And later, I learned that Japanese poetry and arts celebrates this sense of beauty, this sabashi quality to life and to things. Here's two short poems by the great Japanese poet Ryokan. You've heard us recite poetry from him before. In the blue sky, a winter goose cries. The mountains are bare, nothing but falling leaves. Twilight, returning along the lonely village path, alone, carrying an empty bowl. Here's one more, one of my favorites. Frozen snow covers the mountaintops near my house. Along the paths to the valley, all the paths to the valley are blocked. Day after day I sit and face the wall of clay. Listen as the snowflakes brush my window. I love this poem a lot because when I lived in Kanazawa, the winter I was there, heavy snowfall. It's part of a Yukiguni snow country in Japan. It's a place where sometimes you have to go up on the roof to shovel off the snow because it piles up so wet and heavy. So, we suffer so much in our culture, our society, from loneliness. And usually we view loneliness as a kind of enemy, right? Something to get rid of. And of course, it is important to take measures to address our loneliness. We can, you know, join a group activity, perhaps leverage social media a bit better than we do, cultivate gratitude, ask for connection. These and other things are all, of course, very important. But at some point, we may realize that our antidotes, both the wholesome and the unwholesome, are not really effective. Perhaps life, or perhaps a pandemic, will put us in a situation where there is no escape, and we simply have to be there with our loneliness. The practice, then, is to turn towards and rest in loneliness. We gently come back to the present moment of loneliness over and over again, letting go of the stories, not listening to the voices that tell us to eat, drink, have sex, watch TV, get angry. We just practice savoring, if we can, for a few moments, what loneliness is. And then to touch it with a question. What is this? We think we know what loneliness is, but often what we really know is how much we want to get away from it, how to avoid it. So let me ask you, what is the color of loneliness? What sound does it speak? How does it taste? And how can you make friends with loneliness? Rather than think that something is terribly wrong when you experience loneliness, can it be a way to touch a deeper part of your human nature? Someone once asked the great Chinese Zen ancestor Baijiang, what is the most rare and wonderful thing? Baijiang answered, sitting alone on Daxiang Peak. Daxiang Peak is where Baijiang lived. I believe Baijiang is telling us that through having a solid relationship with ourselves and experiencing our sense of separation, we come to terms with our loneliness. How wonderful it is to sit alone. Once a monk met an old woman living alone in a hut. He asked, do you have any relatives, old woman? She said, yes. The monk asked, where are they? And she answered, the mountains, rivers, and the whole earth, the plants and trees are all my relatives. It is true, we are born alone and we die alone. And it is also true that when we rest in that aloneness, in that loneliness, we are joined with everything in an intimacy that is liberating and nourishing. Sue Moon, a writer, editor, lay teacher in the Soto Zen lineage, a student of Norman's, and one of the editors of a beautiful, wonderful book, The Hidden Lamp, Stories of 25 Centuries of Awakened Woman. She wrote this about her own struggles with loneliness. Excuse me for a second. She wrote, "There is a difference between clinical depression and the sadness that comes and goes like weather. Loneliness, disappointment, and regret continue to visit me regularly. And loneliness is real. I don't believe it's a sign of weakness to feel lonely. But thanks to the Dharma, I finally understand that at the deepest level, I am not alone. When I take a step, the whole earth rises to meet the sole of my foot." I'd like to end with one more poem, but this time not a poem from the Japanese tradition, but from the Persian, from the poet Hafiz. Goes like this. "Don't surrender your loneliness so quickly. Let it cut more deep. Let it ferment and season you as few human or even divine ingredients can. Something is missing in my heart tonight. Has made my eyes so soft, my voice so tender, my need of God so absolutely clear." I was just pondering for a moment, what am I trying to say here in all this talk about loneliness? And it occurs to me, the poems and what I just read, the poet Hafiz, so beautifully, clearly pointing out to us, we are not alone. And maybe the feeling of loneliness, the great teaching it offers us, is that very teaching. We are not alone. Please remember that great Dharma teacher, the old woman who answered the monk, "The mountains, rivers, and the whole earth, the plants and the trees, are all my relatives." Well, I think we have one more sit after this. Thank you so much for listening. And let's settle down, both alone in our cushion and together with each other, as we continue our practice together with mountains, rivers, plants, and the whole earth. Thank you.